Welcome to the True Crime Cafe. I'm Angie.
I'm Becky, and you won't believe the case I have for you today.
What you got for me?
I have several cases of maternal mortality. Yes. So as you know, I'm not sure how many of our listeners know this, but I am addicted to television. That's my thing. When I'm working, it's on in the background. Not when I'm writing my books, but like when I'm working my day job, especially if I'm doing graphics or something like that, I have to have it. Yeah, I have to have it on. I need the noise. So lately I've been binging The Resident because the main character was in Gilmore Girls, which I've seen 16 and a half times all the way through. And when I saw he was in this, I was like, oh, this looks good. I'll watch an episode. And I know the series just ended. Long story short, I'm on episode, you know, whatever in season 5. One of the episodes was about racism in healthcare for Black pregnant women. And at the end of the episode, it said, while this was not based on any particular person, and it said something about being inspired by a true case, and it had the name. And when I went into this, I did not expect to fall into a rabbit hole, but that's exactly what happened.
That's usually what happens.
Yeah. And even though this is not a quote unquote true crime where someone will ever be arrested, it is more of a crime against humanity, especially people of color. When I say people of color, I mean pregnant women, because they are not getting treated fairly at all. I'm not saying this happens every time, but it happens enough. And the first person I want to talk about is Kira Dixon Johnson.
Well, I mean, we all know that there is a disparity between, in almost every area of life, between Caucasians and people of color. Like, we've talked about this before.
Yes, we have.
So for it to happen in the medical field, especially maternity and pregnancy and childbirth, sadly, it's not surprising.
It's not. But in a time when it should be the happiest time of a mother's life, it should not also be the most terrifying.
Agreed.
And unfortunately, that's what it was for Kira Dixon Johnson and her husband, Charles Johnson. They got married in 2015. They wanted to have 2 children. When their first son, named after Charles, was born, Kira had a difficult delivery and she ended up needing a C-section. And her doctors automatically scheduled a C-section for her second child, also a son.
What year was this?
2015. That's when they got married. It was the years after that this happened. So it was after 2015.
No, I'm just asking because like I had to have an emergency C-section with my first child. But then after that, like I wasn't automatically scheduled for more C-section. Like my other two were VBAC.
Oof. So in a home video clip of Kira, she's playing with baby Charles. She looks at the camera and she says, I hope this is forever. I know this is forever. Charles says they were ecstatic to learn they were having another baby boy because their first son would have a built-in best friend. And this hits close to home for me because I had a difficult delivery with my first child. It ended in a C-section. When we learned we were pregnant again, my OB was like, okay, let's schedule for a C-section. No question. And I was okay with that because 2 days after giving birth the first time, I was in Walmart buying diapers and formula. Because I thought I had 2 weeks left to go, but he ended up coming right on his due date. And to be fair, after the birth of our second son, I was in the hospital for a few days longer because it was the first ever latex-free delivery in that hospital, and I'd just become allergic to latex. And this was in the late 90s when that was still kind of new. But when I left the hospital, I didn't go to Walmart. Instead, I went to Costco, got a hot dog, bought some groceries, whole 9 yards. And I was like, yay, I had a C-section. I'm out of here. And the recovery was easier in some ways. Kira did not have this luxury. She did not even leave the hospital alive. After the C-section, Kira and Charles are back in their hospital room with their new baby. And what should have been a sweet family moment of bonding with their new son turned into a freaking nightmare. It started when Charles noticed blood in Kira's catheter. And he notified nurses and the medical staff who, and according to an article in People magazine, ordered blood work and a CT scan. But Charles said that that never happened. Several hours later, Kira was losing color, shivering, and she was sensitive to the touch. Charles knew something was wrong, and he said that 8 p.m. rolls around, and he's still begging and pleading for someone to do something. Still, no CT scan. At 9 p.m., the hospital gave Kira a blood transfusion, and Charles was like, where is the CT scan?
Oh my gosh.
He told the staff it was supposed to be performed hours ago, and they told him that Kira was not a priority. Yeah, at that point, I would have freaking lost it.
A postpartum woman who
is shivering, losing color.
Who has blood in her catheter, and mm-hmm. she's not a priority?
Right.
What the hell?
Yeah. So as you know, my husband's a firefighter EMT. He's retired now. And I said, hey, if a woman gives birth and she has blood in her catheter, he's like, she needs looked at right away. He didn't even let me finish the sentence. I was like, okay, just checking. So at an activist rally called March for Moms in Washington, D.C. in 2018, Charles said there were very clear signs that Kira was hemorrhaging internally. He kept trying to get the staff to realize something was very, very wrong. When the hospital finally did an ultrasound, the results showed that Kira's abdomen was filled with blood. It was after midnight before they took her back into the operating room. They left Charles there with his new baby son, and they told him Kira would be back in 15 minutes, but that was the last time that he would ever see his wife alive.
Like, if she had that much blood in her abdomen, how did they think they were going to get in and out of the OR in 15 mm-hmm. minutes?
Yeah. Everything about this pisses me off. Everything.
Yeah.
So when Charles got home, he said he tried to be super dad to his 18-month-old who just wanted his mommy and his newborn who would never get to have his mommy in his life. And Charles is overwhelmed, but he didn't want anyone to help. He said telling his son why his mommy was never coming home was the hardest thing he ever had to do. And he finally came up with, I'm sorry, I miss mommy too. I want mommy to come home too, but unfortunately she's in heaven doing important work with God. And when little Charles was 3 years old, he told his daddy that he wanted to go to heaven so he could see his mommy. And Charles said, there is no book or guide on parenting that helps you prepare for that situation. And no, he said, yeah, right? He said that basically the hospital robbed his entire family of having Kira in their lives. Even though he tries to approach parenting with the mindset of what would Kira do if she were still here, he said it's hard trying to play the role of both parents because you can't be good parent, bad parent, all in the same parent. And when you have to be both and the balance all by yourself while making sure the kids are getting what they need, it's like, who's making sure Charles is getting what he needs as a father? So,
or as a man, as a
right.
person, as...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm not saying that kids need a mother and a father in their life. Like there are plenty of single parents doing it on their own and they are killing it, but you need some kind of resource. You need people on your team.
You can't do it by yourself 24/7, 365 yes. year after year, after year, after year. Mm-hmm. You just can't. Like if you don't have a support system, you're not going to make it, or you're going to have a very, very, very long, hard road to making.
Yes. So unfortunately, Charles is not the only father going through this situation. Since Kira's death, he has reached out to more than 100 people who found themselves raising the children of women who have died from childbirth. In that same People magazine article, he said every story varies slightly. The mother or the family expressed concerns. They were dismissed, downplayed, or denied care. And by the time health professionals did something about it, it was too late. Over and over. Sometimes it's sepsis, sometimes it's internal bleeding, sometimes it's postpartum depression that resulted in the mother taking her own life. So Charles founded the For Kira, For Moms nonprofit group in 2017. And the goal of the group is to end preventable maternal mortality. He testified before Congress about the importance of maternal mortality review committees in every state, which helped pass the Prevent Maternal Deaths Act in 2018. He also testified before Congress for the Black Maternal Health Momnibus Act of 2021, which combined a dozen initiatives, including better training in maternity wards and mandated protocols and standards to culturally codify respectful care. One of the things he told Congress was to think of all the children who couldn't spend Mother's Day with their mothers because their country had failed them. Now, that same article reported that Charles is suing the hospital and the doctors for wrongful death and for civil rights violations, believing that his wife would still be alive if she were white. He said, "I am still absolutely furious. There's no reason that Kira should not be here with her boys today. She was healthy, she had access to care, and she had a family there to advocate. She did not have any pre-existing conditions. What happened to Kira should not have been fatal. Postpartum hemorrhages happen. but it's the manner in which they delayed and denied and allowed her to bleed for hours that led to her death. Women all over this country deserve better, he said at March for Moms. There's nothing I can do to bring Kira back, but what I can do, and the highest honor and tribute that I can pay to my wife, is to fight as hard as I possibly can whenever I can to make sure that we send mothers home with their baby. So as of April 2021, the maternity mortality rate in the U.S. was the highest among developed countries.
Holy crap. And there's no reason for that. Absolutely not.
I know.
With the advances in technology, the advances in medical care, the advances in, like, somebody giving birth now has so much more available to them than like when we gave birth in the 90s.
Right. So get ready. So I gave you that statistic, right? Black women are 2.5 times more likely to die from complications of pregnancy of childbirth than white women, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
That's mind blowing. That is mind blowing.
Yeah. Like, 2.5 absolutely. Times more likely. Yeah.
Like, there's no reason for that.
According to a different article, a 2020 study said that Black newborns born in the United States are more likely to survive childbirth when they're cared for by Black doctors, while Black newborns cared for by white doctors are 3 more times likely to die.
That disgusts me. That statistic absolutely pisses me off and disgusts.
Yeah, it's straight up racism.
It is. Like,
let's call it what it is.
It is. Yeah. It is. I can't. Oh my gosh.
Yep. The study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences found that the race of the doctor did not have an effect on the mortality rate for white babies.
Oh my God. I wish our listeners could see my face right now. Like, how is this even possible in 2023?
Yeah. This took forever to research because I kept having to walk away, cry, walk my dog, go just come back, research some more.
I can't even imagine. Yeah. Like, my
scream into the pillow. Like, yeah. I've said it before in past episodes that, like, when I read things like this, it makes me embarrassed to be a white person, even though I do my best to treat everyone equally, regardless of race, religion, whatever. It's
Like, my oldest daughter is pregnant with her third baby. She's due in November. Her and her husband and the two boys that they have are supposed to be moving down here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And she's like already setting up pediatrician appointments and OB appointments and stuff. And I asked her who her OB was or who she set up the appointment with. And she told me, and I immediately Googled them to see what hospital they were affiliated with in our local area.
Yeah.
Because there are a couple of hospitals that I will absolutely not go to. Like, I won't. I would absolutely risk whatever was going on and drive almost an hour to another hospital than to go to these hospitals. And of course, that's the hospitals that the OB that she had found were associated with. So I researched and I sent her the name and I'm like, try these people. They are one of the best hospitals in the country. And she's like, okay.
Like, yeah. When we moved down here, we did not research hospitals because we did not know where we were going to move. We sold our house in the fall of 2020. We moved down here like the day after closing. You know, Beverly Hillbilly style, packed up the truck and just moved all our stuff that was not in storage. Lived in an Airbnb. Had no idea where we were going to move. And that blew people's mind. They're like, you don't have a house picked out. I'm like, nope. They're like, you're homeless. I'm like,
it blew my mind. Like, I was like, what are y'all doing?
It's like the bravest thing I've ever done. Like, the biggest trust fall ever was just when my husband said, okay, this house looks good. Do you want to walk in? And I'm like, no, I trust you. We'll just buy this house. But it's 2 miles from a hospital. And apparently it's a pretty great hospital.
Okay. We have a hospital that's like literally about 3 miles from the house. Yeah. 2-3 miles from the house.
Yeah.
I won't go to it. I will not go to it.
There's a procedure I have to have done every year with my esophagus. And when I go to that one, I go to the one in the next town over because that's where they do it. And if I didn't like that one, we're in the Myrtle Beach area. There's a hospital, it seems like every few miles, you know. There are lots of hospitals to choose from here. And they're not all with the same group.
Yeah. Yeah. My biggest fear is something happening to my daughter. Mm-hmm. Like, that's why I was so adamant. No, you need to find somebody else.
Right.
Because, like, my husband and I, all of our doctors for everything, all the procedures, surgeries, anything we have to have done, we have done at the Medical University of South Carolina, which is one of the best hospitals in the country. And that will be where she is delivering.
Because... Yeah, I have friends who live just south of Myrtle Beach. Mm-hmm. And one of them has a family member who has a lot of cardiology appointments. Mm-hmm. And that's where they go. They drive 2 hours each way to Charleston.
Yep.
So...
I'm just saying, but, like,
yeah, if I had a daughter or even a daughter-in-law, or even like if it was like one of my sons had a significant other who was pregnant, I would do the same way. I would be on the computer researching, Googling, saying, okay, please avoid this one. Or especially if they were a woman of color.
Exactly. Now, granted, my daughter is not a woman of color, but it's still a concern of mine because, like, her babies are big. She
does pop out big babies.
Her babies are big for somebody her size. So,
yeah, let's make that clear. She's a tiny little thing.
But she had a C-section with the one-year-old. And I believe she's planning on having a C-section with this one, you know, later this year. But, like, I want to do everything that I can to ensure that she has the safest, most advanced medical care should the need arise. And I can't even fathom being a person of color and going into a hospital expecting to have my baby, expecting it to be the happiest time of my life, and never make it out of the hospital because I wasn't treated as a priority.
Yeah. I cannot imagine being a medical person and looking at any patient and saying, I'm sorry, or looking at their family member and saying, I'm sorry, they're just not a priority.
Like you, I do my best not to judge people, race, religion, gender identification. Like, but I can't imagine as a person, just not even in the medical field, but as a person, telling somebody else that they're not a priority because of the color of their skin.
Exactly. I was complaining to an older family member about a different family member being racist. And the first family member says, well, you have to understand, that's the world in which they were raised. And I'm like, that's the world in which, you know, certain people in my family tried to impose certain ideas on me in the 80s. And I didn't grow up to be a racist adult, or at least I try not to be. I try to look at them as examples of what not to do. So that same study said that the largest decrease in the mortality rate was in complex births, where Black babies were born in more complicated cases, were far more likely to survive with a Black doctor. And the mortality rate also significantly decreased at hospitals that delivered more Black newborns. So like you said, if you are a pregnant woman and you're concerned about your healthcare, and whether you're Black, Hispanic, Native American, any other indigenous group, whatever, do your research, be proactive, ask questions. Unfortunately, she's not the only one. Alana White, who was 25 when she gave birth to a little girl via C-section on March 7th of this year in 2023. A few hours after giving birth, she complained of a headache, and her mother said that she just, you know, complained she wasn't feeling well. By the time a nurse came around, Alana was unresponsive. So when the baby was delivered, the baby was in the NICU, and it doesn't, none of my research showed why. But by the time they took her for a CT scan, it showed excessive bleeding on her brain. So it was a huge brain bleed. They did emergency surgery. And on the John Hopkins site, it said that there are many reasons why the doctors would do the surgery, including removing blood, blood clots, whatever. So afterward, they put her in intensive care. But after a few days, she passed away. So WebMD said that 36% of Black women undergo C-sections every year compared to 30% of white women. But Black women are three times more likely to die from these same procedures.
Do they have any idea why? Could it be because people of color are not receiving a higher level of prenatal care, or like, do they have any idea?
One study I found said that women who are pregnant or postpartum have three times the risk of a hemorrhage compared to when they're not. But I didn't find anything specific about prenatal healthcare and this. But if there's something that could be found in prenatal healthcare and they're not getting it, so they weren't able to pinpoint it before the delivery, that could definitely have something to do with it, I would think.
I would think so too. Like, I know that people who live below poverty level, they don't necessarily have the access to prenatal care or regular prenatal care or imaging or whatever, like ultrasounds and stuff like that, that would be able to detect the issues beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Monika Furch did survive both her pregnancies, but she had a miscarriage. She went through a roller coaster of fertility medications, and then she got pregnant with her son. At 5 weeks along, she started getting morning sickness that would not stop. She used all her personal days, and then she had to start using unpaid time off. And when she complained to her doctor, she was told it was just morning sickness. It would get better in time. So did you have morning sickness when you were pregnant?
I had morning sickness all day and all night with my oldest.
Was it the whole 9 months?
No, it went away after like the first trimester.
Yeah. I didn't so much get morning sickness as I got car sickness. So I just had to be careful what I ate before going into work. So at 15 weeks along, which was just 10 weeks later, Monika had lost over 20 pounds from her morning sickness.
That's the hypermesis or whatever.
Yep. So extreme morning sickness is called hypermesis gravidarum, and it can last throughout the entire pregnancy, even if the pregnant woman is being treated for it, which all too often doesn't happen until the woman lands in the ER with dehydration because her doctor doesn't listen. And if she's a woman of color, there's an even higher likelihood of this happening. And it's worse if someone has, as we were just talking about, if they live in a low income area or they have no insurance, they can't afford to take time off work, they can't afford the copay, so they don't go to the doctor. About 2/3 of Black patients in the U.S. saw a doctor in their first trimester in 2016, compared with 82% of white patients, according to a report released by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So overall, roughly half of people who have to pay out of pocket went without their first trimester checkup. And that's important. Like, that's so important. If you're going to miss an appointment, miss the second trimester. So Monika now has a new doctor who takes her concerns seriously, but it hasn't completely eliminated her healthcare issues, which included things like a medical device to pump anti-nausea medicine through her system, which cost thousands of dollars out of pocket, money she did not have. And going without the medicine meant throwing up sometimes as many as 8 times a day or more. And while Monika loves her children, she said giving birth is not worth 10 months of hell beforehand. And after she gives birth to her second child, she just wants to have her tubes tied. She's done. Yeah. Yep. I did not go through any of that. And when my oldest was 6 months old and they told me I was pregnant again, I was like, yeah, can we just tie my tubes? That was the only, when she asked if I had any questions, that was the only question I had. I was like, I'm done. Yeah. She's like, what if it's a boy? What if you have two boys? I'm like, they'll be best friends. And they are.
That's right.
They will not admit it, but they are.
I know. I've seen your boys.
Yes. So Allison Felix is one of the best Olympic runners in the world, but her own pregnancy opened her eyes to healthcare inequalities for mothers of color. Nothing about training to be a 6-time gold medalist could have prepared her to deal with the complications during her first pregnancy. And she said if she had more knowledge about the high maternal mortality rate of Black women in America, then maybe she would have been more prepared for the unexpected scares during her own pregnancy. And she is someone who's educated. She never expected to feel intimidated. She didn't expect to experience any of these issues. But she said if she was more aware, she could have been more proactive and would have asked more questions. And her experience was that she had preeclampsia and she had to undergo an emergency C-section at 32 weeks. And while she's grateful for the care she got, she said it gave her a firsthand look of what women go through with the risk for Black women.
And I'm sure that she had access to very good medical care.
Mm-hmm. So she has now partnered with the March of Dimes and RB's Enfa portfolio of brands, Better Starts for All program, which aims to give support and education to expecting mothers throughout the United States. It provides a wide range of prenatal care services to women who would otherwise have little to no access to them. And there's more hope. Dr. Mary Ann I hope I'm saying her name right, Edibet, is the lead and executive director for Merck for Mothers, a global initiative that uses a holistic approach to help promote birth equity and to reduce disparities in maternal health. Some of these services are things like mobile health clinics that go to underfunded communities and online groups to support first-time moms. And Allison went to DC to advocate for mothers, especially Black mothers, by testifying in front of the House of Representatives about the crisis of the Black maternal mortality rate. And Merck for Mothers has supported the CDC to make sure that every death is not just counted, but it's investigated. And I think that's important because not all deaths get investigated.
No, they don't.
Yeah. Different episode of The Resident and Dr. Bell, who's on like the state board of doctors, something. I'm horrible at remembering who's who in these shows, but it is Dr. Bell. And he's trying to investigate. And the board is shutting him down. And they're like, no, we'd only investigate like this number. And I know that's fictional, but I know that other aspects of the show have been based on truth.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, I'm sure there's some sort of number or something that exists internally.
Mm-hmm.
But
and they have criteria
in situations like where somebody's just given birth.
Mm-hmm.
It can be it's easy to say, oh, it was a complication,
right,
resulting from giving birth, and just sweep it under the rug.
Yeah, because if it doesn't meet the criteria, it's not getting investigated. So Merck for Mothers has discovered that solving the maternal mortality rate is within our grasp because now we have a full understanding of the racial disparities that exist in maternal health. And I don't think it's a full understanding. I think they've hit the tip of the iceberg of understanding.
I think so too. I'm just flabbergasted, man. Like it's we're midway through 2023.
Mm-hmm.
There is no reason that people of color should have a higher mortality rate. There's not.
I agree. Like,
and see, this is for my little soapbox rant.
Go ahead.
This is why the government should not be run by old white men, big pharma, and insurance companies.
I agree 100%.
Because if you try and tell me that big pharma and insurance companies don't have their hands in the government,
mm-hmm,
with kickbacks and
oh yeah,
hey, you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back type. Yeah. Mm-mm.
One of Dr. Edibet's family members died after giving birth, leaving behind a daughter. And her family's still asking what they could have done to prevent it and why nothing's changed. And she's a doctor. So the focus on Merck for Mothers is to create a dynamic where women have the information to feel empowered through their pregnancy journeys and shift the conversation on the care team and the care the woman is receiving. We'll put a link to this in the episode description. But one of the biggest complaints women in pregnancy have is that no one listens to them. And when you combine that with under-resourced hospitals and higher levels of pre-existing conditions, you have a perfect storm of inadequate healthcare for women of color, including Black, American Indian, Hispanic, Alaskan Native women across the United States. And if you're pregnant and you need help, no matter who you are or what your situation is, Dr. Edibet recommends using the Hear Her campaign resource site, which we will link in the podcast description. Also, it offers step-by-step guides on how to talk to your providers, what questions to ask, what to do if you're not being heard, which organizations you can reach out to for support. And in addition to other advocacy groups out there who can help is the Safer Childbirth Cities initiatives, where you can ask for a doula or some other kind of peer support companion with you during your appointments. They can help be an advocate for a healthy pregnancy. And if you'd like to get involved and support Merck for Mothers, you can subscribe to the newsletter on their website.
This, I can't believe in 2023, Becky, that we're still talking about people receiving inadequate health care.
Right.
Because the color of skin they have.
Mm-hmm. We're supposed to be one of the best countries in the world.
Yeah, no.
And certainly not with health care.
No. Like, I'm not an advocate for like free health care for everybody, like some other countries do. I'm not an advocate for that, but I do think that healthcare needs to be more affordable for everyone.
Yes. And I don't think anyone should be excluded.
I mean, like, I have pretty good health care. Mm-hmm. Like, I have really good health care. Yeah. Okay. So back in 2016, I had to have hip surgery.
Mm-hmm.
It was an outpatient procedure. So I went in that morning. They did the surgery. Once I woke up in recovery, my husband brought me home and took care of me at home. Like, I wasn't even there for 12 hours.
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't. You know how hospitals and everything, you know, they'll send you a list of charges and stuff. And at the top, they say, this is not a bill, or somewhere on it, they say, this is not a bill.
Yeah.
So we're looking at it. My surgery for the use of the operating room, the doctor, the physician charges, the anesthesiologist, you know, because you have to pay each.
Oh, yeah.
Pay the doctor separately, $50,000.
Yeah.
And I wasn't even there for 12 hours.
And that probably would be a lot higher today, 7 years later.
$50,000. Now, this tells you how good healthcare I am privileged to have. And yes, I'm very privileged about this. And I know this, like, I know I have excellent health insurance. You know how much we paid out of pocket?
How much?
$2,500.
That's not bad at all.
Out of 50,000? No, I would gladly pay $2,500.
Yeah, exactly.
But you have other people who either don't have medical insurance at all, or they have crap medical insurance because that's what they can afford to have, who don't get procedures done. Like, we'll wait until something is so bad that it drives them to the emergency room, when had they been able to afford to go to the doctor 2 weeks prior, it probably would have been a week's worth of antibiotics. You know, so it baffles me how anybody can sit there and say that there is no disparity in healthcare field, or in insurance, or in anything. And there is no reason that babies of color should have that much of a higher mortality rate.
Or their mothers.
Or their mothers. But there is no reason in 2023 that the people who run our government can't figure out a way to level out the healthcare field and in the insurance field so that everybody can afford treatment and everybody gets the same level of treatment.
And then
the story is just so pissed me and off.
If these women are overweight at all when they get pregnant, then it's a double whammy, because you have fat phobic doctors who don't want to listen, or like, oh, you have a headache, it's because you're overweight. Oh, your feet are swelling, it's because you're pregnant and you're overweight. Oh, is this? Everything is blamed on overweight.
When I was pregnant with my first daughter,
okay,
I was underweight when I got pregnant.
Yeah. I've seen pictures of you.
Like, I was underweight when I got pregnant with her, and my doctor looked at me and told me, normally they say not, you know, 20 to 40 pounds is an average pregnancy weight gain, but they like to keep most people towards the lower end.
Yeah.
He told me I had to gain weight. I had to gain at least 40 pounds by the end of my pregnancy to have like a healthy weight going in and being able to handle like the delivery and the recovery and stuff like that. Like, my doctor told me.
Yeah.
Now, again, I was blessed. I was still a military dependent when I had my oldest daughter. So I got like fantastic healthcare. Like, I mean, my appointments, my like everything right up into my emergency C-section, my recovery from that. Like, but I also know that even as a teenager, because I was 19 when I had my first daughter, I know that as a white teenager, I still would have gotten better care than a person of color who was the same age as me that had the same exact insurance and like all things equal. And I'm aware enough to know that if everything was equal, other than the color of our skin, I'm aware enough to know that I would say 95% sure that I would have received access to better health care.
Yeah.
Or because I was scared. I was 19, and mm-hmm. I'm going to the military base for appointments and stuff. So it took me a little bit to end of my pregnancy to start mm-hmm. advocating and asking questions and, well, what if this happens or stuff like that, where a lot of, it's like a cycle.
Yeah.
Teenage mom has baby, baby becomes a teenage mom. Not what happened in my case.
Yeah.
Thank God. But it's like a ride, nobody knows how to get off because the resources aren't there to help mm-hmm. them get off this. I'm I'm so mad right now, Becky. Yeah. So freaking mad.
My mom was a teenage mom and I was not, but my sister was and her daughter was.
Mom was not a teenage mom and my daughter was not a teenage. Yeah. So, but yeah, this case be so angry, mm-hmm. so angry. Feel free to cut any of my ranting that you want because
people love your ranting.
I am so angry. It makes me want to go out to a hospital and just go, what the hell are y'all doing? Why isn't everybody getting the same level of care?
Mm-hmm.
I get it.
I get that hospitals have on the resident, they have their VIP floor where they have their high end patients, celebrities and, the governor. And so, I get where they would have that because they want money for the hospital.
Get that. But what we're talking about is different.
Yeah. What we're talking about, I get that they get a different level of care because they're rich and the rich, whatever, but which also shouldn't, it should just be everybody gets the same level of care.
If you can pay for a $50,000 surgery out of pocket, and that's what you choose to do so that you can get VIP care, mm-hmm. whatever, it doesn't bother me. It's where we're looking at everything is the same.
Yep.
A color of skin. One person gets better care or has more access to care because they're white. No.
I agree.
It can be that way. And yes, I understand there needs to be healthcare insurance policies, and that's luckily I have my insurance through my husband's job. Luckily.
Yeah, I have it through.
If I pay for it out of pocket, I wouldn't be able to afford the level of healthcare that I have. So trust me when I know that in that aspect. I'm very blessed. I'm very privileged to be able to access that healthcare.
Yeah, we have it through my husband's retirement. And our oldest son is getting ready to get kicked off at the end of the year because he turned 26. And we're like, hon, you gotta find healthcare. You gotta do this. And he's like, smart as a whip, very gifted musician, very skilled at his job, which is in a music store where he gets an hourly wage, but he also makes commission on things he sells. But it's not a full-time job. It does not offer benefits. And he's like, well, how do people like me get healthcare? So we're navigating that right now, but he has to do it. We told him we cannot help you with this. You're an adult, you're 26.
Mm-hmm. I get it.
Yep.
I get it.
So yeah, he's privileged in the fact that he's a young white man in America, but he is gay and he's very open about his gayness. And
he one of the reasons why I'm so lovable.
He's super lovable. He'll come in my office in the morning when he gets up, but it's more like around noon when he gets up. He'll come in my office and he's like, people need 7 hugs a day. Here's your first one. I know nobody's hugged you yet. I'm like, well, thank you. Things like that. He's so sweet, but he does get discriminated against because he's gay. And I hate when it happens. My second son is more private. As far as I know, he's not gay. And he has a full-time job where he has benefits and all that stuff. And he's about a year and a half younger than his brother.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still some discrimination there. And while we're talking about the government, in Florida, they are taking away healthcare rights for trans people. And I'm like, no, people still need healthcare rights.
Mm-hmm.
They need
healthcare. It doesn't matter your gender, color, mm-hmm. your religion, your identity. Like, it shouldn't matter. Everybody should have access to health care. Mm-hmm. And we know that not everybody has access to health care, period. Mm-hmm. Not just not having access to the same level of care as other people, but they don't have access to health care.
Yeah.
They can't afford it. Or think about it. Like, if you're paying, I'm just using, like, as an example, I'm just throwing some numbers out. I don't know if they're accurate. Some of them are based on what I personally pay for visits and whatnot.
Yeah.
So if you're paying $400 a month for basic health insurance, okay? And yeah, you're working full time, but you make like 10 bucks an hour or whatever. Mm-hmm. You've got rent, you've got utilities, you've got to buy food, and now you got to pay your health insurance. What money do you have left if, you know, if you need to go to the doctor and it's a $50 copay? Mm-hmm. Like, where do you get that $50?
And a day off work, and you have no personal time, and you need medication, and there's a copay for that prescription. Now, I am blessed. Most of my medications I can get over the counter now. And it's great because I can get the Walmart brand. I can get generics, you know, over the counter. But the one I do have to take, the name brand, I pay $4 a month for. And I am very grateful. My husband retired from Northern Virginia. We have a friend who retired from a fire department in the Carolinas. And in that county, they made it so when you retire, your health care does not carry over. They're now paying over $1,200 a month for insurance for two people per month. And because you can retire out of the fire department before you're 65 and they're around our age, they're going to have to do this for like another 10, 15 years. Mm-mm. And the wife's job is kind of like ours, where we're freelance contractors. So there's really no way for them to get insurance through her job. So yeah, we're definitely a country in crisis when it comes to healthcare.
Mm-hmm. We are.
And unfortunately, like you said, when you put it all side to side, yeah, we all have healthcare problems. But if you're a pregnant woman of color in America, mm-hmm. the stakes are so much higher, and it is grossly unfair.
It is. And I'm just going to tell our listeners that I know we don't normally go off on tangents. We don't normally talk about anything related to like politics or anything like that. But this is an issue that stems from the government. Mm-hmm. It's like I've always told Becky, I don't talk about religion, I don't talk about politics.
Yep, we never have. And we're opposites on some levels of that. And this is how why we've stayed friends for so long.
Mm-hmm. But everybody in this country be outraged by the statistics that were included mm-hmm. in this episode. Yep. Everybody should be outraged. In the year 2023, these disparities still exist.
Yep.
Nobody who is in a position to do so wants to fix it.
No, especially the people whose pockets are being greased by, like you said, insurance companies, big pharma. So next year's a big voting year, 2024. Do your research. Know who people are at the polls and don't just vote for them because they're popular. Look at what they stand for.
Mm-hmm.
And look at who can not only benefit the boxes that you check when you fill out a form that asks for your race and your gender and your age, but who can help the greatest number of people in your community and the country.
I don't even know how to wrap my head around those statistics. Mm-hmm. And if those were the statistics from like 2020, you know they're worse now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, after the pandemic, far worse. And let me tell you, if those statistics were swapped to where someone did a study and said, hey, white women are 2.5 more times likely to die during pregnancy than women of color, you know they'd be trying to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't. I'm so mad. I'm so mad. Like, I just don't see how anybody in this country doesn't want to make access to healthcare and equality in healthcare a priority.
Right. I don't see how people can have so much hate inside of them that they're willing to prioritize other people based on the color of their skin.
I'm so done. Those were very eye-opening and heartbreaking stories. I'm glad that you were able to find resources that we can link to for any of our listeners that want to get involved or they need the help.
I wish no one needed the help.
I wish nobody did either.
Welcome to the True Crime Cafe. I'm Angie.
I'm Becky, and you won't believe the case I have for you today.